I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better. And welcome to part two of this week's Tiny Tantrum. So, on Monday's episode, we got under the skin of Inner Space. And today, we're taking a look at a movie that does exactly what it says on the tin. No, not Darling, I Small and the Children, but from 1989, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Now, while the professor is looking for the kids,
just gotta keep our eyes open.
They're taking matters into their own hands.
I say that, and it's ours!
I'm Mark!
Something's very weird here.
What is it?
Earthquake!
No way! Lawnmower!
Ah! We'll have a champion at the end of the show, but which film will it be? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken.
Hello, Clash Butters. I hope your face ends up on a milk carton. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilley.
And welcome to part two of this week's Tiny Tantrum. We went through Inner Space on Monday, so today it's Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Excited about this?
I am, but I do have an additional connection to bring up on this episode. Is now the time?
Well, I was just going to say very quickly, this is obviously our month-long listener-led selection here on Clash Pod. These suggestions are coming from you. You pick two movies with a connection, you throw them our way, and we may be doing them on the pod. These connections, or at least these movies, come from Martin. Once again, big thank you, Martin. Chris?
Yeah, I don't think Martin even realised this additional connection, because something huge connects these movies. Do you know what this is? It's to do with Clash of the Titles, the podcast.
I've never heard of it.
And it wins them entry, both films, entry into the Clash Hall of Fame.
Oh, Frank Welker.
It is a hat-trick movie for both directors. It's the third movie we've done by both of these directors.
Is it really?
Yeah.
So, Joe Dante on Monday, we've done Gremlins 2. We've done this. We did Inner Space. What's the other Joe Dante movie we've done?
I mean, it's weird that you would get that we did Gremlins 2.
Gremlins! Yeah. We put them face to face.
And Johnston. Yeah.
The Rocketeer.
Yep.
What was the other one? We haven't done Jurassic Park 3, have we? We talked about it a lot.
Yeah, we have talked about it a lot. That Velociraptor on the plane.
We haven't done Captain Thingy.
Alan.
It's Jumanji.
Oh, yeah!
So, yeah, they're not quite with our director who's done four movies that we've covered, which is Mr. John Carpenter.
But I honestly thought you were going to tell me that Ante was voiced by Frank Welker, because that is entirely believable.
And also, today, we've got James Horner hitting the double hat trick.
Oh, yeah.
This is the sixth James Horner score movie we've done. Mm. Incredible.
It's an are we going to be touching on the score? Because there is actually some interesting stuff about this score, but... It's up to you, V. It's your movie, babe.
I haven't
it's your movie.
Anything about the score, so you jump in.
We won't be touching on the score. right then, Chris, you did Inner Space on Monday. Victoria, it's your turn with Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Take us on a journey.
Wayne Szalinski is a bad inventor, but a good dad. Or a good inventor, but a bad dad. Because his latest creation shrinks his kids and those next door to a quarter of an inch before he sweeps them up as rubbish and tips them in the back garden to find their own way home. He then nearly smashes them to death in a bee kidnap baseball related incident, drowns his daughter and eats his son. It is hungry work, half-heartedly combing the lawn looking for your tiny children. But it all works out thanks to some shouting and the kids are restored to their usual size. The family is saved, but more importantly, so is Thanksgiving / Christmas / some North American feast ceremony involving turkey at the end.
Now, to me, that was written and read by someone with not a lot of love for this movie.
No, it's not. But nonsense. I love this film.
Exactly.
Very negative.
I was very under the...
But otherwise, what do you do? Just reading at IMDb going, lovable Rick Moranis shrinks his kids and everything's fine.
You say it's
I like that. You do that next time. That was great.
Or you explain it as a metaphor for coming out. There's so many directions you can go in.
You could do that, apart from when it's not a metaphor for coming out. So then you're a bit
stuck. You never know.
But I'm just being snarky because I've said before, I find it easier. It's just
your natural state.
It's my natural state. It's just laziness.
Yeah. But you do actually, you were really excited when this movie came along.
I love this film, yeah, because it's a perfect, wholesome family cinema trip memory. And I hope it's a real memory, you know, because memory is quite porous. And I just remember clear as day being taken to the cinema, the whole family, and everyone had a brilliant time. Just one of those perfect film, fun for all the family. Starting from when the fucking credits roll and it's like, yeah, this looks amazing. Yeah. And just seeing the poster.
I'd say before the credits roll because...
There was a cartoon,
you had a Roger Rabbit cartoon beforehand.
Oh, shit, I forgot about that.
Yeah. Tummy Trouble.
Wait, is that the one with the baby?
They've all got baby hermit.
They've all got baby hermit. Yeah. All right, fine.
Yeah, in a hospital.
Yeah.
But even seeing the poster made me feel like I'm not going to be snarky. I'll be quite sentimental for a minute. Just really safe, protected, looked after, just in the crook of my family. And that is such a nice feeling for me. Mm. And so it's really sweet. So I have a lot of love for this film. But yeah, I was a bit mean about it then. But yeah, watching it again, there are some bits where it's like, it doesn't reach the peaks that it could in some places, but we'll get to it.
Mm.
When did you see it?
Well, this was in one of my geekiest periods. Empire magazine had recently started.
Don't think you're there yet, but
and so this came out like 7 months after America.
Right.
So I remember knowing about it, being really excited, and then getting Empire in, I think that's the year they started doing, telling you what films were coming out for the rest of the year.
It definitely was.
Yeah, and circling them all.
So I thought you knew them, but what you know is him.
And figuring out what was coming out around February that I could go to for my birthday.
Oh,
and
it
was
that's so this. Sweet.
Figuring it out, putting it on his wall planner.
Bossing your mum.
This came out a couple of weeks before my birthday, so I'm pretty sure I circled this and said, let's do
a
family
trip. Oh my God, so
it was a birthday
treat? Did you go to Pizza Hut?
Maybe so, or Frankie and Benny. There was a place called Dillinger's in Beckenham, which was named after the gangster.
Yeah. John Dillinger.
Yes, great. The bloodthirsty gangster. And we used to go there for burgers and milkshakes.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. Wow. Was it good?
Oh, it's lovely. So yeah, that's my memory. Just it's similar to yours, actually. A really good family, happy, joyous memory.
Yeah. What about you?
I lost my parents to this movie.
You watched it a lot. Crying.
No, I think I mentioned it on Monday. I already feel like I was too old to see this movie, which is strange because you're older than me, Chris. But when I came to this movie, again, I was already watching things like Inner Space. So watching this film, I felt like I was watching a kid's movie. I didn't feel like this was a movie for me. I felt
so
like,
cool. He's so cool in it.
You know.
So like, I was watching Terminator.
Yeah, totally. I'd probably seen RoboCop by this point as well. So.
You've been scared the shit out of you.
I was watching The Devils.
Yeah. That's listen, we were all different up in these. We don't have a Dillinger's, but you get to see movies earlier. So, I'm just, you know, I sort of watched it again when, kids filming it.
So what did you see this in the cinema? This was 89, wasn't it?
No, I saw it on video.
Okay, so you would have been about 13 probably.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, but then you are a little bit
older. You are too old. I mean, I was 8 or 9, and that's just
exactly.
I was
11.
I mean, I am still really cool.
But
I was actually too old for
Were you chewing gum with your mouth open while you were watching it?
Yeah, I was.
Who is it that you like you from the Monster Squad? You like that kid on the bike that you just like doing popping wheelies around you?
Rudy. Yeah, I love Rudy. Or Corey Feldman in like anything Corey Feldman's in, yeah.
So let's do a bit of background, shall we? Okay, so let's talk about Stuart Gordon, who I know that
Stuart Gordon.
I've interviewed Stuart Gordon.
Have you?
Before he passed away. Yeah, yeah. Very serious. Very serious man.
Serious about the craft, or just serious?
Yeah, yeah. Very seriously. Yeah,
I love it.
You have to be a serious man to deliver one of the great science fiction movies, Robot Jocks, which hands down is brilliant. Why no one has? Well, why people are remaking like good movies and not remaking Robot Jocks, which is already a good movie, but could do with a special effects update, is beyond me.
I'm sure I've told you this. Duncan Jones wants to remake Robot Jocks.
What?
Or if he doesn't, it's basically his favourite sci-fi from the 80s. It's not one of the big ones.
Incredible. Do you know the story of Robot Jocks, Vicky?
No, I don't think so.
It's kind of an East and West superpower that sort out their differences, not with war, but with two giant fucking robots piloted by the best of their civilizations in an arena that people sit round and watch the two robots fight.
Okay.
I think it was called Salute of the Jugger. Is that right in America? Or I think it's got two names, but anyway, it's good.
Anyway, so
let's talk about that.
Hey, listen, I'm happy to talk about Robot Jocks. Do you want to talk about Robot Jocks, V?
I'd have to see it first.
Have you done research on Robot Jocks?
Do you know? So anyway, Stuart Gordon wanted to make a kids film because his kids can't watch the films he'd been making at this point. And so with his collaborator, Brian Usner, am I saying that right?
Yeah, who made Society.
Oh my God!
He's a messed up.
Society, now there is a messed up movie.
I think I've seen that.
Let's talk about Society.
Yeah. Remember, what's the key scene in that film?
It's where they all...
I don't want to spoil territory, but it's weird, gooey sex, probably. Yeah.
I think I've seen
by
that.
By aristocrats.
Yeah. Gooey, yeah, I have
gooey
seen that.
Aristocrat sex.
I have seen that. Anyway, so, and also another writer that he'd worked with called Ed Naha from Dolls. They take a detailed treatment to Disney, and originally it was called Teeny Weenies. And it is a very sort of Stuart Gordon idea about this, not a mad scientist, but let's just say a brilliant, but... yeah, all right, fine. Madcap inventor.
He did two Lovecraft movies which had eccentric scientists.
Eccentric, that's the best
word,
yeah.
And experiments going wrong.
Yeah.
Reanimator and From Beyond. Yeah. So this was in his wheelhouse.
In his wheelhouse, but it's for kids. And the thing is, so I read an interview with Stuart Gordon where he said Disney was worried that I was going to kill all the kids. And I kept saying, no, I'm not going to kill them, but I want the audience to think they might die.
Wait till you get my change.
He also said
one of them should die.
Oh, that's terrible.
He also said the potential for severing some heads was there when you had a giant ant coming at you with those big mandibles.
Yeah.
So it was in the back of his head.
But this is the reason why I'm talking about my memory of it as being very sweet and wholesome. And it is all of those things. But like most 8-9-year-olds, I do like to be scared because kids do like to be. When you are safe in your life, it's a thrill to be scared because you are ultimately protected. So
what Disney said to him, Disney said, Stuart, we want it to be more like the absent-minded professor and less like the fly.
But think about, like, we all loved Roald Dahl books, and some of that is terrifying.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's quite a lot of, like, child abuse.
Even to this day, the evil canids in Charlie and the Great Glass Elevator, the shapeless aliens that appear in the in the space station, that scared the life out of me.
I mean, you know, it's a lazy thing to say about Harry Potter, but I think about Harry Potter, like, the themes within Harry Potter are very, very dark, and people do die, and kids fucking love that shit. But I was reminded this way of, like, do you remember Point Horror books?
No.
No, you maybe didn't read them, but Point and Horror, but they were so popular when I was at school. And
are they like Choose Your Own Adventure?
No, they might have done one of those like versions, but it's more like the story's always two girls are babysitting, one of them gets killed. Who did it? Was it her boyfriend? And then it turns out it probably was. They're like Scream, but for actual 12-year-olds.
Sounds awesome.
And there's a whole, Point and Horror books are brilliant. Anyway.
Can I do that for a living now?
Oh my God, it would be so good.
Yeah.
You were either into Sweet Valley High. If anyone listening knows what I'm talking about,
love the twins.
So you do know what it is.
There was a TV show with those.
I hated ladies. Sweet Valley High, but I loved Point Horror books.
I was just into fighting fantasy books, you know, where you literally do choose your own adventure.
Yeah.
Ian Livingstone, Steve Jackson, Death Trap Dungeon, those kind of things.
I mean, I think that's why, like, Enid Blyton books, I was encouraged to read, but there's no menace. There probably is menace if you read it at the time, because the culture that would make more sense.
There were smugglers. I'm always sure there were smugglers.
There were tons of smugglers,
a lot of smugglers.
And the kids would find the treasure. Yeah.
Swarthy smugglers who wanted their treasure back.
Yeah.
That's what I'm writing about right now.
Oh, is that you really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it is that one, yeah. Swarthy smugglers.
Anyway, Stuart Gordon was going to direct it, but he didn't. So like a lot of stuff you would say due to an illness, he had to pass it up. But I read an interview where he said that the pressure of working at Disney took its toll on him, and it said sending my blood pressure skyrocketing, and I had to drop out of directing the picture. And the only person to call to wish me well was Jeffrey Katzenberg. The result was that my wife, now obviously passed away recently, but at the time, my wife now eternally loves him, and I have to keep reminding her that Jeffrey was the guy who made my blood pressure soar in the first place. So it sounds like it was pretty stressful. But then Disney bring in Joe Johnston, who at that point was a visual effects specialist known for working on Raiders of the Lost Ark. This was his first directing job, which blows my head off.
I agree. I didn't realise that, but no. It's amazing that this is his first movie.
Yeah.
And as we mentioned on the Rocketeer episode, that's why I'm looking at you when I'm saying this. I'm addressing this to you. There's this podcast I talked about called The Rocketeer Minute, mm-hmm. where each week they spend an hour on each minute of The Rocketeer. and he guests on it a few times, and each time he does seem to talk about how he had a very bad experience on Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and he can't believe he ended up doing another film for Disney. Because he doesn't go into detail as why, but he just said this was not enjoyable making this movie.
So yeah, they got rid of one, then they nearly got rid of another. Yeah. So there's going to be no one left.
They're not an easy company to work for, I think. No.
Which is crazy when you think about what they represent. Which is joy and happiness and fun. So much fun. And then you hear these stories and you're like, oh my God.
Ed Nahar talks about, he said, for a while the film was called Grounded. The studio sent out these magnifying glasses with the word Grounded etched into the handle. All the members of the press got them. I was also a member of the press at the time, having a column for the New York Post, and I got one as well. I thought, great, this title will appeal to electricians.
That's not the funniest joke in the world.
But he makes a good point. Grounded does sound like it could be about electricians rather than... he said, whoever came up with the final title deserves a medal.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah. And that was part of the magic as well, of seeing this title. It's in the vernacular now, but at the time it was just such an odd turn of phrase.
And yet they managed to screw up entirely the sequel. Why is the sequel not called Honey, I Blew Up the Baby? Which is infinitely funnier than Honey, I Blew Up the Kid.
It was. You know why you've said that? Because it was originally called Honey, I Blew Up the Baby. I'm pulling this now from a long time ago. They changed the title at the last minute.
Which is badly.
Yeah, because you don't need... The honey eye is what tells us that it's a sequel. It's not the kid bit.
What could this be a sequel to? Honey, I Blew Up the Baby. I have no idea.
It was obviously a ginormous monster hit. In a year with some excellent offerings, as far as I'm concerned. Do you know what else came out that year?
I know it came out the same day as Batman.
Mm. Yeah.
Which I think is part of the reason. I guess, people couldn't get into Batman. Mm. And so they'd go with the spillover, would get into Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. And plus, Roger Rabbit had been such a huge hit that the idea of seeing more Roger Rabbit, I think, attracted people on top of the film itself.
Yeah.
Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Ghostbusters 2. Ghostbusters, I know that year very well.
Yeah, look who's talking.
Amazing. Ghostbusters 2. You do that for Ghostbusters, but you don't get to go all dewy-eyed over Ghostbusters 2.
But imagine how excited I was when Ghostbusters 2 came out.
To take you back to that year before actually witnessing
before
that film.
I had the book as well. I had a little picture book about it. I tried so hard to love it. I tried my best.
Do you know what my biggest problem very quickly is with Ghostbusters 2? In amongst all the other problems, it's the fact that no point does it explain why Slimer suddenly becomes friendly and is driving the bus, which is something that they pulled from the real Ghostbusters cartoon without explaining why, which is so rude.
It is rude.
It's so rude.
But Joe Johnston, part of it probably was, Ed Nahar talks about the fact that Disney had no confidence in it. There were a bunch of articles saying they were disappointed with the film. They told everyone that worked on it not to call it a family film. Didn't want it referred to as a family film. They thought that was uncool. They booked a reissue of Peter Pan into cinemas for a few weeks later. And that's what was supposed to happen. And then after the opening weekend, everything changed. They called it a family film. They cancelled Peter Pan.
They went, oh, right, yeah, shit. Yeah, no, it's a family film. Definitely. Come and watch it.
No vibrator jokes.
No off-colour joke. Although there are a few off-colour. You don't like the French joke.
What I said on the last episode was the put your lips together and blow joke. But the French
joke... When does that happen in it? What is that?
She tells him to whistle and he can't whistle. And she says, you know how to whistle, don't you? You put your lips together and blow, which is it Marlene Dietrich or Greta Garbo? Someone famous said that in the 1940s. And it's a blowjob joke.
Oh!
Which they thought, oh yeah, we can use that here.
And also as a blowjob joke, it doesn't make any sense.
You don't literally
blow.
Do you think they meant it?
I've been doing it wrong.
You have. I nearly said that to you last time. I was like, what are you, this is not working for me.
Wow. Blimey, she went there.
Anyway.
But yeah, we could talk about the French joke because it does get said more than once in the film, and it's odd.
Yeah.
It's odd.
So that's as much as I did, unless you want to do any more. Shall we just talk about the film?
Mm. Which I will say, when you watch it on Disney Plus, have you noticed they've got these parental advice before the film now?
Yes.
This one says rated 6+, contains tobacco depictions.
Yeah.
And that's all they're warning me about. There's some other stuff going on if I'm 6 years old that you should probably be told about.
Yeah, but it's tobacco.
Blowjobs. For example.
Incorrect blowjobs.
My problem. Do you watch Disney Plus on your laptop?
Yeah.
Spacebar doesn't pause on it, does it? It's the most infuriating thing.
I thought he was going to say something interesting there.
This is interesting. How do you make a streaming service and when you hit the spacebar, it does not pause?
No, you're right, because I was watching Swiss Family Robinson on it last night and it did annoy me.
It's infuriating. Fix it. Carry on.
Okay. So, do you want to talk about the opening credits, the cartoon? I thought you wanted to say something, Chris, but if not, I'll just say they were incredible at the time.
Yep.
They're still loads of fun. The things that happen in the credits don't happen in the film, as far as I can tell, but whatever. They look really good,
yep.
So that's all right. So, straight away, we are in another kitchen from the 80s with bonkers gadgets that don't work, a lot of which focus on coffee.
Why is the mailbox not a gadget, though? It's such a mistrick. Mm. It opens and he does a normal mailbox and their mailbox should be bleeping and a flashing lights and he just gives it to the dog.
And then the postman's like, I don't want to drop off your mail.
The postman's really scared to put it in.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But it does feel like they copied and pasted the house from the Peltzers in Gremlins, doesn't it?
And another reason you can tell it's the 80s, so Amy and Nick's mum, Diane, has stayed over at Grandma's house after an argument with Dad, Wayne, Rick Moranis. So Amy, who I think is about 16, is like a house slave now. So she has to cook and clean.
She's having a laugh, though, isn't she?
She's having a laugh in her role.
She can have a dance.
The other woman has gone, so now you must perform these roles.
It's quite good that it's a broken-ish family for a Disney movie that we open with. It's not all happy. The parents might be breaking up months.
Yep.
I mean, this is what I initially thought. I was like, I think it's really good that the mum is supporting the dad, kind of, by working as a realtor. Mm-hmm. And he's sort of like messing about with his experiments. But it's a bit much, isn't it? You have an argument with your husband and then you just sort of go, fuck it, I'm off. I'm going to stay at Gran's and cook and breakfast and I'll come back when I feel like coming back.
Yeah, and then she's like, oh, the kids miss me. It's like, well, you just walked out on them, so I don't know how they might feel about it. But also the neighbour, what's the neighbour called? The Thompson, Mrs. Thompson?
Yeah.
What was she called? Mrs. Thompson, anyway.
Yep.
She does, or someone says to Diane, you haven't been here much. It's like, where have you been?
So I haven't seen you around here for a while.
Yeah, for a while, not for one night. So, you know, that is quite dark. But I like that. And I think this film has a lot to say about, I think it puts these other story elements in about family and father-son relationships. And I think it does it really well.
There's a lot of, everyone has an arc in this film. even the smallest characters, even the dog. Has an arc.
Mrs. Thompson doesn't have an arc. I thought about this.
That's a good point. She witnesses an act of bravery by her husband.
That's not an arc.
That's not an arc, you're right. Shit. That's not.
Yeah, she doesn't have one. But I agree, everyone else does, but she doesn't. She's a mere passenger on her husband's journey to not being as much of a dick.
Not being a dick, yeah. So Wayne is struggling to convince people. I'd sort of lost, are they investors? The people that he's trying to show his shrinking machine works? Although it doesn't.
No, it's just other scientists.
Just boffins.
Just they're brainiacs or geeks, as Chris would call them.
Yeah, and
when he's
very
out
rude.
With a hockey team. Look at those fucking geeks over there with their glasses on. You can spot them because of the glasses.
And the irony is, I was the geek, so it was really myself I was hating.
It's always the way, isn't it?
You can't have it both ways. You can't have it both ways.
You can't hate yourself and other people.
You set your stall out on Monday, you can't call other people geeks and then go, but I was a geek.
No, he's absolutely right.
Only people that wear glasses. And I do need glasses.
Are you resisting getting glasses? Because you think you made you look like a geek? What? What?
Yeah.
Are we at school? Are we literally at school?
Look how cool I look right now.
Look at how good I look. Are you mad? Look at my glasses. They're amazing.
He's based his entire new look on Max Payne, and Max Payne does not wear glasses.
That's fair. Okay. Anyway... there's a bit of science here about what the machine is supposed to do, and it's something about removing empty space.
It proportionally reduces the empty space in objects and people.
And at the time, I was like, that makes sense. And today, as a 39-year-old, absolutely makes perfect sense. Why not?
Yeah,
it's fine though. They explained it away in a sentence.
It's done.
Boom. Yeah. Let's get on with the story.
It's done. Anyway,
it sounds like it should make sense.
It does. Excuse me. So anyway, it doesn't work though, does it? Until. Ron next door, a next door kid, sets it off with a well-aimed baseball and the kids are shrunk. And then we've got the first of a few really cool perspective shots and a massive dead fly, which again, when you're 8 or 9, you're like, oh, yuck, brilliant.
But I think that's a really clever move. Like the idea of setting up insects that early, because the whole movie for me and the terror in this movie comes from insects.
Bugs, yeah. And
because if you think about it, the way when you've watched enough nature documentaries, so the way insects kill each other and what insects do to each other is so horrific. Like a wasp that'll paralyze like a caterpillar, lay its eggs inside the caterpillar, and then the baby wasps hatch in the caterpillar while the caterpillar's alive, and then they eat their way out of the caterpillar.
Yeah.
So you've got that in your mind and you're thinking, that is out there and they're small enough that they could get stung and have wasp eggs in them.
Do you know what I learned today? There was an interview in The Guardian with Isabella Rossellini, and she's very interested in animal behaviour and insects, I think particularly, but this is the bit that I read. The praying mantis, you know that the praying mantis, the woman praying mantis eats the man praying mantis.
Bites his head off, yeah.
Bites its head off, but she does it while they're mating. Right. And so the praying mantis man's nervous system has evolved so that the feeling is where it needs to be so he can still be inside the lady mantis while his head is being eaten. So basically, he gets bitten on the head, he doesn't stop. Isn't that amazing? Because you would. You'd be like, oh, okay. I didn't realise that's what we were doing.
Yeah, but
he doesn't.
What's my safe word again?
It's Isabella Rossellini.
I'm saying it. Isabella Rossellini. Isabella Rossellini.
That's a terrible safe word.
It's too long, I understand.
And she's too sexy.
Blue Velvet. Oh, fuck. Anyway. Oh, where were we? So the kids are in the yard because Wayne sweeps them up, puts them in a bag of rubbish, and the quest is on. They've got to get back to the house.
3.2 miles from the house.
So little Nick has got this gadget, which I think is a calculator, but he manages to... I don't know, because...
Of course it's a calculator.
How does he work out... No, this is because I don't know anything about maths.
Right.
Okay. More about my lack of knowledge of maths after a short break.
This week on Stakhanov...
Join the self-care club as they trial out all those January health kicks. Listen as they put themselves to the test with Couch to 5K, Dry January and loads more.
I think that evening was probably the closest you and I have ever come to having a bit of a Barney, which we didn't
really
have, but we nearly had one. It could have tipped into Bruegus.
And why not check out the latest episode of Between the Lines with Melissa Reddy, where Roberto Martinez reflects on the highs and lows of his managerial career and the lessons he's drawn from 14 years at the top of the game.
When you're a young coach, you almost feel that you want to answer every doubt or every question mark that there is surrounding your position and out there. And then the older that you get, you understand that you cannot stop that. It's impossible. You need to affect the headlines of tomorrow. And that's the real power of working in football and being the manager.
All that... And a whole lot more at Stakhanov.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Doesn't he go, we're quarter of it, yeah, oh, he's just...
It's maths.
I swear to God, one of my notes is like, that's very convenient. He's got a magic device.
A MacGuffin. He's got something. He's just invented something that calculates distance.
I'll show you my workings out. Very convenient. Uh-huh. What is this machine he's got that works out distance and scale? But it turns out it's called a calculator. Amazing. So they're going to take in along their way. Now, is it a river of piss that they see? What is it then? No, because one of the interviews I read with Stuart Gordon, I think it's either Jeffrey Katzenberg or someone at Disney got really obsessed with the kids seeing a massive pile of shit. Like, obsessed with it. Like, it should be like a skyscraper because kids would love it and it would just be so awful. Yeah. So then when I saw this river, I was like, oh, it's dog piss because, okay. Okay, fine. It doesn't ruin my enjoyment either way. Whatever.
Does it a little? Because they don't, go on, what does she say?
Amy's like, I'm not, they say we can swim or we'll cross it. And Amy's like, oh, I'm not stepping in that. And it's like, well, if it's just water. It's
dirty rainwater.
Oh, what?
They would have referenced the fact it was piss if they've gone to all the trouble of making a river a piss.
But she's quite a resourceful girl.
But at this point, they aren't covered in shit, like, or earth and everything. They're still relatively clean, so they don't want to go through it. And they do see a dead bug sort of inside out, another dead bug floating along it.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have got in it, but that's because I thought it was piss. So anyway, then we've got...
But now I'm fine.
So this film to me is, the memory art of the set pieces just makes me feel, again, all those nice feelings of like from being a child and watching this film.
Makes you feel little again.
Makes me feel little again.
Literally and metaphorically.
Yeah. And the first big moment is Nick is... I keep saying kidnapped by a bee, but that's not really true. So little Nick climbs inside a flower. He's allergic to pollen. He's kind of not allergic to pollen, but then a bee picks him up and sort of takes him off round the yard and he's flying around. And it's Russ, the older kid from next door, who's also got a really sweet arc, which just gives it enough time. It's not overdone. But his storyline is about proving himself in the world as a grown-up, as a grown man. And his dad is a little bit obsessed with that. And his dad's like, you know, you should do weights.
He doesn't want to be a jock. He's not a jock. Dad's trying to make him into a hockey jock or
whatever. The minute he's called upon to do something brave, he doesn't even hesitate. He's like, I'm going to climb on that bee. Like, no questions asked. Gets on the bee. Saves the day.
Do you like Russell?
I do, yeah, a lot, yeah.
I think this was another problem I had with it as a kid, was that none of the kids I felt were cool enough. Like, there are definite comparisons between this movie and The Goonies, but whereas The Goonies, like, they were cool, and you were like, oh, I want to be one of those kids. None of the kids in this were in any way aspirational.
See, I think the difference is you've got nice kids here, whereas The Goonies is made up of largely brats, quite bratty kids.
Mm.
And I think there's something nice about these kids being quite sweet, like a lot more like the Stranger Things kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, but now even the Stranger Things kids are kind of cool and, like, alternative. These kids, like, you know, for all Russell, like, quitting the football team, still look very, like, you know, all-American, wholesome.
I think Nick's great, though. I really like Mini Rick Moranis. Mm. I think that's a really... You think he looks great. I think he's a really fun character. Really cute. Yeah, so...
Oh, I'm not saying they're not good characters. And as an adult watching it, it's fine. What I'm saying is, as a child, you want someone who is, like, the person you're like, they're cool. Like Corey Feldman in Stand By Me. I know I keep going on about him, but it, like, and in The Goonies, like, he was a cool character. And in this, there's no one like them.
Mm. Yeah, I think Russ has got a bit of that, but point taken.
So meanwhile, the big people, Wayne, is trying to figure out what's happened. He also nearly hits the bee with a baseball bat, which that's a weird moment.
So thank you. I saw that moment and I wrote down, what an overreaction.
Yeah, who hits the bee with a bat?
But it's because it's a plot point, isn't it? Because he then looks at the bat, looks at the window and realises something has happened, and that's how he finds out the machine shrunk this furniture.
Yes.
So because I was like, what an odd thing to have him do at that point.
And he said, never hit a bee with a bat.
Never hit a bee with a bat.
I don't think I'd be able to. I know I wouldn't be able to.
You never caught a flying chopsticks? This is all, it's all easy stuff. That's how I spent my childhood.
Really?
No.
I'm really good at
It's a drinking game for the hockey club.
Oh, right. I'm really good at... I'll tell you what I'm brilliant at is I'm a really good mosquito hunter. If you're ever in a room with me, I go completely still. I'm like, it's amazing. I'm like Predator. I'm just like, wait.
Because
and then I hear it. And then
so fair. I bet they fucking love you.
They do.
I bet. But it's
one
not,
of us. One of us.
But it's not really it's not really a gift if all you have to do is just stand in a room and they flock to
they
you.
They do. Yeah. They come to me and I'm like, come closer. She got you.
She also sucks the blood out of everyone around her.
Yeah. Just put your lips together and
are
blow.
You a queen? Anyway, Wayne sets the holes on the yard, and then this is an important point in the story because Amy nearly drowns because of all this water that's flooding through the yard, and she's rescued by Russ, and that sort of stops the squabbling between the children because she really nearly dies, and she has to cough up all this sludge, and her brother is mortified, and it's awful, and that these kids... They've been squabbling amongst themselves a bit and it hasn't seemed that serious to them. And then it does seem very, you know, the stakes become very clear to them, which is a really good moment and quite
it's
brave.
It's a cool image as well when the sprinkler comes up out of the grass. It looks like a dystopian, like, future hellscape. It's really scary.
Yeah.
The effects are amazing. Obviously, they're a little bit dated now, but I can certainly remember just how thrilling it was, the bee sequence.
Yeah.
Which they did using blue screens, and they spent a fortune on that, and it was so effective at the time. And as you say, all the practical stuff as well. It looks that stuff hasn't dated because it was real.
Mm. Yeah, and I wonder. Yeah, I watched it and I was like, none of this looks out of place. It doesn't look dated. I wouldn't do any. You know, with your modern eyes, just it still looks fantastic. But I wonder if a lot of that is like just sentimentality.
I'm sure it is a little bit, but it hasn't dated enough. We've had films where it has dated enough to almost spoil your enjoyment. But with this film, I don't think it does.
It's an age old thing, though. If they made this, and they are remaking it, I think.
They're
doing a sequel.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like, the minute you put a CGI ant in for Ante, you will lose all the emotion that people have towards that ant, and it will ruin it. You need practical effects because it helps the actors and it helps the audience.
Yeah. So the kids working together is best shown by harnessing an ant, Auntie, and riding the ant as far as they can. This is like a little quibble. I think the kids' storyline is stronger than the adults, which I think is a shame because the adult for Wayne and Diane, for the Zielinskis, because there's a point, their marriage is like in trouble. And there's a point where, and then Wayne says, like word for word almost, somehow I think this is all my fault. And it's like, it definitely is your fault. Like, as your wife should be like, it's clearly your fucking fault because I wasn't even here. Mm. There's no lock on the door. I've told you a million times,
That would be a really shitty thing to do, though, to go, I'm sleeping at my mum's house tonight because we've had an argument. And now this is your fault because I wasn't here.
Yeah, but it's realistic. Like, if someone does something to the kids and it's on their watch...
Insight into Vicky's home life.
I am telling you, if it's on somebody else's watch, you have every single instinct, because you're scared and angry, you want to go, this was your fault! But you have to be like, okay, we'll fix it and try not to resent that person.
And I agree for a better movie, but you can't. I think that's looking at it through grown-up eyes, whereas when I was a kid... Every time it cut to the adults, I was kind of wanting to get back to the children.
Yeah,
I want to see the adventure.
Yeah.
I think Matt Frewer...
Max Headroom.
His story, his arc is great.
It's
and his
really
performance
good.
Is really good. Yeah. So I think, like, strangely, he's in it more at the start than Rick Moranis.
Yeah, he is.
Like, it sort of becomes
it's
his
really
story.
It's really noticeable. Mm. Yeah. He has the aside with his son about be a man and lift weights and when I was your age. And it's such a good, there's so much going on. Little Russ is like, oh God, I'm so embarrassed by you. But also, I will do what you tell me to do, which is such an interesting, kids at that age, when if Russ was 3 years old, he'd be like, fuck off, Dad, I'm not doing that. But you're my dad, and so I can't say no. So I will lift weights, but it's really complicated.
And that bit where he's like, his dad's getting a little bit angry, and he really diffuses it because you're like, well, it's a bit tense. And he goes, all right, Dad. Like, yeah, okay. And the bit where his wife, he's going to have a cigarette outside, and his wife, he goes, you know, like, she doesn't even turn around. She goes, you're not smoking out there, are you?
Yeah.
And he just spits it out and goes, poof.
Yeah. No. But again, the familial relationship, he doesn't go, no, and then have it. He does what he's told because he wants his, I just find it. I think it's really interesting.
Agreed that their relationship seems more interesting than the Zelinskys.
The Zelinskys, the way that the relationship between Diane and Wayne is resolved is Wayne's been up all night trying to fix the machine or look for the kids. It's like, well, so he should because he kind of lost the kids in the yard. They seem remarkably, this will be modern eyes, remarkably chilled for the fact that their kids are in the yard given the dangers. They're like, they're basically like, they'll turn up in the morning. Like, don't worry about it. So he's asleep at the machine and there's a weird scene, which to me felt really like crowbarred in, where she walks into the room and he's asleep and she goes, I love you, Wayne Zelinsky. It's like, okay, so you're forgiven, which is great because what? Because you fell asleep. You should be, not a moment's rest.
Do you never feel like that though? I feel like when you are watching your partner sleeping, it is when you love them most because they're not talking.
They're not talking to you.
Yes, we're all agreed. We're all agreed.
You do.
Do any of our partners in this podcast? I don't think so.
No.
I think we're fine.
We're fine. Say what we like.
They got better things to do.
No, but I do think you are really like, that's sweet. Look, like you do. It's great. You love them most when they're just like there. It's like, look at it.
Yeah, we got it. It's weird that you keep saying it.
Did you say it? Jesus. Okay, so as I've said, the parents to me don't seem quite as in bits as I would be in that situation. For me, exemplified by the fact they've still got their appetite. So the kids are in the yard and Wayne's like, hey, let's have some Cheerios, by which point the kids have managed to get across the yard. Like, trauma and fear, I think, robs you of your appetite, in my experience.
Yeah, but every person's different.
Fair enough.
I'll be with you. And also, I've only just discovered Cheerios about a year ago and I really like them.
Do you know, what about when you were stoned?
We didn't live next to a 24-hour garage like we did. That's why we went to the garage and bought Cheerios at 4 a.m.
Nothing better.
Oh. Really? Cereal?
Oh, peach cordial and cereal. Yeah, because you need a bit of energy. You just need some sugar. It's
chocolate bars.
Very quick.
Chocolate bars, chocolate bars and crisps. This is.
I can't think about Cheerios without thinking about weed. It's because I don't eat Cheerios anymore. Anyway.
Why? You had a problem.
No. So that interview I was talking about with Stuart Gordon, apparently Jeffrey Katzenberg, apart from the poo idea, was also keen that the kids would get trapped in a shopping trolley and get like have groceries thrown at them. And Stuart Gordon said he assumed this was a way of having more product placement in the film so he could increase the budget without paying for it. But it did inspire this scene, which is Nick falling into the Cheerios and nearly being eaten by his dad. And so, you know, he describes it as a moment of Freudian perversity because he's obviously about to devour his son, like a very sort of
it's quite
and a
dark
Greek tragedy. Yeah.
Mm. I find it quite scary because the idea that you might be eaten by your father.
I mean, it is a proper horror film for kids, I feel like this one is. There's scary scenes, there's tense scenes, it's a mini horror film.
Yeah. It reminds me of watching all the old stop-motion sort of Sinbad movies, like when the scorpion attacks. Mm. I think that's really good. Mm. And we haven't really touched on Auntie's death.
Auntie died, Mickey.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Auntie died.
You skipped over that.
You know what? It's because I can't look directly at it because it's too sad. So that's I'd always do that. Yeah, it's really, really sad. It's good. I forgot.
Oh, killed by a scorpion?
No, no,
that's really scary,
A lot of scorpions in America.
I think so, yeah. Ooh. I think you forget they've got more... They've got more going on than we do.
Black widow spiders. That's what you're worried about.
In New Zealand.
Well, they are there too. Are they there?
But no, it's very... No, sorry. No, I don't know. Dead ant. Let's talk about the dead ant. It's heartbreaking. Yeah. Like, it's... And you're going to get to my change a bit later, but... don't know if it was necessary.
Yeah, I suppose who learns a lesson as a result of that?
And that poor ant, they've enslaved that ant and then it dies.
The weird thing,
I think he got a lot out of that friendship.
What I find, he got a little bit of cookie. What I find is,
he could have got the cookie himself.
He nearly did.
That was his cookie.
It's the fact that they keep emphasising before he dies. So the writers know that they're going to kill this ant, and they make the kids repeatedly say, he's just a baby. He's a baby ant. Yeah. He doesn't know any better. He's learning. It's like, so no, it's not just an ant. It's a child ant that is killed.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with Chris. I don't think it's necessary.
Yeah. I think, what's Russ's brother called? Ron. So Ron is really the person that's had the arc with Auntie by befriending. Mm. So maybe it's to give Ron... an emotional, because he's quite... He's a little shit. I was going to say stoic, but that's a weird word for a 12-year-old. he's something, and he needs to break through that shell.
Well, he needs to understand death.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that, I think that breaks him. I think after this movie, he turns to drink.
Yeah. So we're getting to the end. Wayne discovers the kids and sees that they're small. And so we're going to put them back with the machine to make them big again. But it's the end scene, obviously, apart from engorging the children. No.
Why?
Embiggening.
Why would you say
because
that?
Because he kept saying embiggening before, and that's not a word.
I think it is.
No, it's not.
I don't think you should say engorging
No,
children.
I don't. I think we should take it out. Enlarging the children. I don't know. Making them big again.
Fine. Fine. Fucking pick one.
Before making the children big again. So Wayne needs a volunteer for the machine because someone says, is it, you know, such a good idea to just use it on the kids, given that it exploded an apple? And Mr. Thompson steps up. And so his sons can see that he will do this for them. And I shed one of my rare tears. That's not true. I cry all the time.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
I was preoccupied by the fact that they do. I mean, obviously, they would do this, but they skip a beat because they go from going, right, the machine is, it makes things... small again, but they need to. They should. He goes, do it on a living thing. Do it on me. But they haven't actually brought anything small back up to large
and see
that it works. See whether it works on a non-living thing first. They go straight to a living thing.
What you should do, they do it on a non-living thing and it explodes. But then Wayne has a reason why he knows it will work on a living thing, and so you have to trust that. But when
the baseball,
when Mr. Thompson steps into the line. We are thinking you will die.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't. Yeah.
Because it just feels... I mean, it's a difficult bit, this, because after Cheeriogate, you are just waiting for them to be enlarged again.
It's an anticlimax.
Enlarged. There you go, Victoria.
Yeah.
Not engorged.
Embiggens in the Urban Dictionary. So
the Urban Dictionary's not a dictionary, really.
Absolutely. Well, it's got dictionary in the title, so...
Look, it's like a user-led dictionary. It doesn't count.
And it means to make bigger or to enlarge.
You don't need to tell me what it means, but pretend means.
Embiggen.
The clue is in the word.
Honey, I embiggen the kids.
It is a dictionary.
It's an urban.
Anyway, so I think the arc is strongest, the story is strongest for the Thompson kids because their dad steps up. And I think the youngest one has got away with, he's kind of his dad's favourite in this because he will go fishing and he'll do whatever. But I think that actor does well, little Ron, at showing that he knows he's a bit on borrowed time. And so he sees his older brother and what he's going through with his dad. And he's like, that will be me in a few years. And he's just trying to eke out these good feelings. And all of that complicated grown-up emotion is like resolved in 2 seconds because he steps in front of this laser. Well, I think it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then big food.
Super-sized turkey.
Yep.
Super-sized dog biscuit.
Yep.
And then grubby... French class line to end it when you're fine with the big food. That's a funny joke.
Yeah.
Bang. And then a callback to this joke.
Yeah. In the mouth of a child.
I can remember, I think probably my best friend Neil came with me to the cinema to watch that on my birthday. And I can remember him saying to me, did you get that French class joke? And me going, yeah, did you? And he's like, yeah. And then I certainly went away thinking, did I get it?
Yeah.
Did you get it?
I did get it, but I wasn't sure. I wasn't 100% sure. I said I was sure. Because I didn't know. I thought I knew it's a reference to French kissing.
Right.
And obviously it is. I think it is, isn't it?
Yes.
You're asking us now. That is the only.
I've got to check.
That's the only joke.
I've got to check.
That's the only joke. The only joke is it's French kissing.
I wonder if Neil pretended or wasn't 100% sure, but said it just so we were both saving face with each other.
Probably.
Why do you have a problem with it?
I just think it's a. I feel like it's a slightly grubby joke to have at the end of this family
French
film.
French kissing It's hilarious. It's like it's the most. It's the nicest. I don't think it's sweetest.
I don't think it's a very funny joke. It's not funny. And so to end your film on boom, this punchline when you've just had the punchline of a turkey and a dog biscuit, it was unnecessary.
Do you not think it's quite funny the fact that it decreases to the little circle and then he enlarges the circle again to do a shit line? It's like almost wasting the audience's time with a shit line. In itself kind of funny.
No.
Right. I kind of do.
And that is all I have. Oh, apart from there is going to be a new one. Go on.
No,
it's fine.
No, no. I was just wondering whether you enlarge the turkey while it's alive, then kill it and cook it, or...
Such a good point.
But you don't. You must, because no one has an oven that big unless you in the oven.
The sequel...
Yeah, how did they cook it?
Well, they must have cooked it as it was a regular-sized turkey and then enlarged it. But then surely that you're just adding space then. If Rick Moranis at the start, if we follow his theory, they're just adding space that wasn't there before. So you're not getting any more turkey. You're not getting any more protein. I mean, that thing's going to go off like a fucking bomb when you carve it. It's just full of air.
Burst balloon.
Yeah.
His little legs just flying around the room.
So
there's your joke to end on.
Of course. There you go.
And so the sequel, obviously everything's changing because of COVID. It was announced just before COVID hit. It's going to be a Disney Plus film. And Joe Johnston is directing.
Yay.
Rick Moranis is apparently returning. And that's Rick Moranis, who wouldn't return for Ghostbusters, but he's apparently coming back for this, although this might have changed since we've recorded this. And Josh Gad is playing grown-up Nick.
Yeah.
No, it's good.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, I like it.
I can do that.
So shall we do the bits?
Hell yeah.
Chris, what was your best scene?
Dad about to eat Cheerio Nick. I didn't see it coming, and it looks amazing.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Alex?
The bit where Rick Moranis finally tells his wife that he has shrunk the kids.
Yeah.
That whole conversation when he's like, he's sort of going, the machine works. She's like, the machine works. That's great. Do the kids know? He's like, yeah, I think the kids know. I love that bit. Either that or Auntie's death, because I think it's really quite powerful and astonishing. And I remember thinking at the time, am I really crying over a stop motion ant? But I was, and I did again. Or just because, you know, why have one best scene when three will do? The hat gag, where he's not quite brought back to normal size at the end, where he puts on his baseball hat, and it's just slightly too big for him.
That's quite sweet. Mine is the flying bees, because it was really terrifying. I think it's a shame that they end up basically in the same bit of garden without too much work, and there could be a fun bit of story about how they find each other and what tools they use to find each other. But I, you know, it's stayed with me for many years. Your most valuable whatever, Alex.
Matt Frewer, Max Headroom as Russell Thompson. I think he's absolutely brilliant. He does a lot with a character that could have just been the overbearing dad, and makes him very funny and very sympathetic by the end. And I think he's absolutely hilarious in this. And I was in a movie with him once.
Were you?
Chris?
What are the two films he's been in?
No one cares.
I was in a movie with Matt Frewer.
Oh, right. Which one?
Oh, thanks for asking. He plays Frank in Dawn of the Dead, the Zack Snyder remake, which I was in.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
So just to clarify, that's not why I picked him. I mean, it's not like, you know, because we work together, I feel obliged to pick him. But I'm just saying, he's great in this movie.
You bring this up a lot. When we do, I think we should do Dawn of the Dead v Dawn of the Dead.
Yep.
Can you get, obviously you can get Zack Snyder to guest.
I can.
Excellent.
Oh, great.
So that is a done deal.
Yeah,
oh,
that's good.
What's yours?
A big fan of Tummy Trouble. I rewatched it this week, and it ends with a very good joke about the price of healthcare in the States, which would work 30 years later.
Great.
Was it on your Disney Plus thing?
No, it's on YouTube.
Oh.
It's on YouTube.
So you went to YouTube to watch the movie, the cartoon that would have gone before the movie in the cinema?
Yes.
Wow.
It's called Prep.
Okay. I mean, it's not part of the movie.
Yeah, it was in 1989.
But then if we ever do a Pixar movie, do we have to do the Pixar short as well? Do we have to watch the Pixar short before the Pixar movie?
I'll decide at the time.
Okay.
Whether it's relevant, whether it's one of my MVWs. But really, in this film, I'm going to go for the sets. Set design, I think it is amazing.
That's what I've got as well. Thanks, production designer Greg Fonseca.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's a quite terrible Disney documentary about the making of the film, which you can find on YouTube as well. And it's awesome watching these, you know, watching the kids on the broom. The broom's mm-hmm. made of foam and them sort of hanging on and in rigs. And it's just, it's really cool the way they put this all mm-hmm. together. So that's my pick.
I want to pick Greg Fonseca or Joe Johnston, because to be able to do that as your first, I know that he's not an amateur at that point, but it's an incredible thing to be able to do. The confidence that you would need, the self-belief, the ability to be a good manager and a good team and face down just lots of shit every day is quite awe-inspiring. Actually. So
you should give that speech to every new director who starts working at Disney. The amount of shit
you have to deal with,
have to face down. Yeah.
But if you can do that,
if you can face that shit head on,
every single minute of your day, and your days are long.
What, your blood pressure and your general health is fucked. But if you can deal with that, welcome to the family.
Isn't Jeffrey Katzen a quote? It was like, if you don't like working Saturdays, don't turn up on Sunday. That isn't that.
Good. That's a good line. That's a good line.
I think that's him, because, you know, they expect a 7-day week out of you. Anyway.
Yeah, I got it.
Sorry. No, I'm not sorry.
Isn't he being spiky today?
No, I'm not sorry.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, we get it. Can we move on?
Okay,
got to keep the show under an hour, you know, obviously. Places to go, people see.
But if you could change one thing, Alex.
I'll do it really quickly, obviously. Do not, James Horner, have the Goonies fucking score.
Oh, naughty, isn't it?
In this movie.
It's in the trailer, and I thought, oh, that's naughty. And then you watch them like, oh no, they've got it in the film.
But it's not the Goonies score. So I will keep it very brief, obviously. But I went down a little wormhole on this about what is plagiarism and what is homage, like, and why composers often find themselves using, because it's not the Goonies score. It is his own score that is basically a complete ripoff of the Goonies. And there's lots of interesting arguments about why people do it. And a lot of the time, it's not the composer's fault. A director will go, I basically want the Goonies for this bit. And then the composer will have to go off and sort of do his duty, but also want to be creative. But to me, that Goonies score, it's just too close to the fucking Goonies. And I'm watching it going, I'd rather be watching the Goonies, because I like the Goonies a bit more than I like this. Mm. And I'm thinking about the Goonies. And even if I didn't like the Goonies more, I'd still be thinking about the fucking Goonies.
Yeah.
So the score is a bit of a problem.
What about you?
I don't know if you saw this trivia, but the Society for the Prevention of English Language and Literature,
I did,
aka Spell, awarded Honey, I Shrunk the Kids with its 1989 Dunce Cap Award, citing the title's grammatical error of using the word shrunk instead of shrank.
Yeah.
An unnamed Disney executive responded that the incorrect usage was on purpose and directly referenced a line of dialogue. So it should have been Honey, I Shrunk the Kids or Honey, I Have Shrunk the Kids.
Mm-hmm.
Which got me down a rabbit hole. Who Framed Roger Rabbit should have a question mark at the end of it. Marley and Me should be Marley and I. and You Got Served should be You Were Served or You Have Been Served.
Exactly.
But I'm not going for that. Don't Kill Auntie. Auntie, now the size of a pony, appears in front of the snobby college bigwigs who are in the process of dismissing Wayne Zielinski's story about his invention. Auntie's arrival proves that Wayne is telling the truth. And
I love it. That's great.
Got to hold my hands up. That was in Ed Naha's original script.
Oh, really?
And he's still pissed off that they didn't make that. They changed it. That was in the original script.
Definitely.
And it's a great ending.
It is a good ending.
There is a thing where you need the spectre of death or death in a script at a certain point. And Auntie does provide that. But it seems overkill.
Yeah. And the girl had nearly died, hadn't she? So we've
really nearly died. Yeah. My change is the machine at the beginning is never a shrinking machine. It's a growing machine.
What?
And it doesn't work. And the baseball rewires it. Wayne figures this out, and the change over in the middle part of the film, he realizes that if he's got a shrinking machine, that will make his investors happy. For some reason, when he's like, I've got a growing machine, they're like, we don't care, but it doesn't work. We definitely don't care. So the family is saved by a surprise freaky thing that should never have happened, really never have happened, rather than basically an accident waiting to happen. Do you see what I mean? It's a shrinking machine, and if he's got a lock on the door, you don't have a film. But if it was always a growing machine, and it's the baseball that rejigs it, then you've got the double surprise of not only have the kids been shrunk and find the kids, but then Wayne can be like, and I can use this development to save our family.
Okay, but what are you talking about?
Were you not? When you first... I've seen this film before, obviously, maybe a couple of times, but I thought, wouldn't it be fun if it was like, the machine in the attic grows things, okay? But now the baseball, rather than the, you know, fuck it, fuck off.
No,
fuck off.
But the more you try to explain it, the more ridiculous it starts to sound.
He's an inventor. And the thing with the baseball, he's like, oh, the laser goes through the baseball. He should have thought of that because he's an inventor. Yeah. It's a basic idea that a baseball, like, convert does something to the laser, right? Yeah. But if the machine is completely redone by this freak accident, that is more better. All right?
That embiggens it.
It engorges.
Now, that would unembiggen it.
Wow.
I'm going with Chris's change.
It's not even a voting system.
Right then. Has that brought us to a close on Honey, I Shrunk the Kids? I think it has. It's going to be an interesting one this week. I'm excited to find out which way both of you are going. Let's do the verdict.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
It's the verdict, Chris.
Well, it did go into this one. I'm really not sure what I was going to pick. Inner Space, it's good to see a big budget action comedy effects bonanza for kids, which we don't really get anymore. I was thinking, what is like this? Ant-Man was the one that sprang to mind, and not many others, the Ant-Man movies, to do all these things in one film. We just don't make them anymore. But like a lot of Joe Dante's films, I think it's a bit all over the place and a bit of a mess. Too much going on, the opposite of what you think of that. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids is a really good family film, three-dimensional characters, amazing special effects in service of a really exciting story. So, while I enjoy Inner Space, I'm going with the one I loved the most when I was a whippersnapper, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Okay. I'm going to jump in here then, only because, you know...
I know what's happening here.
Yeah, you right. do know what's happening here. hands down, part of it is nostalgia, no doubt, but I love how insane. For exactly the reason Chris doesn't like Inner Space, I love it. I love the fact it layer upon layer upon layer of crazy and zany. And I just think it's good. And it was... I'm saying it's not nostalgia. It was like a bullet of nostalgia to my heart watching Inner Space again, and I bloody loved it. And it's a 5-star movie for me, and it is one of the definitive 80s movies in my... It's in my top 10 all-time favourite movies now. So that's why I'm voting for Inner Space. That's why you can break my heart, Victoria.
Oh, Alex. Before we watched these, I thought I knew for sure that which way I was going to go, because like you, Alex, one of them was just like, I would have put it in my top 10 favourite films of all time without having watched it for 30 years. And Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, I would have been like, yeah, I enjoyed it. It made me feel really nostalgic, but I was so surprised at how invested I was in it, how scared I was of it. I cried at the end of it. And Inner Space, that has broken my heart because it's a mess. It is just a mess. There's too much going on.
What about your history with that movie?
One
of three VHSs.
One of three VHSs, I know.
My history with the other film, with the family and stuff.
Yeah. So it's equal. It's so strong family memories. Either way, I loved my granddad and watching those three VHSs all the time.
But really, your granddad and those VHSs.
What do you think you're doing?
it's Joe Dante all over again. He loses his shit when Joe Dante.
Oh, is that the pattern? Okay.
I just want you to make the right decision.
I am going to make the right decision.
Well, you're going to make a decision, I can
because,
tell.
For the film that I enjoyed the most, and for all the reasons that Chris said, I am voting for Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Bollocks to both the you're wrong. Inner Space should have won this week, and I'm very disappointed in you because I genuinely thought we all saw eye to eye. And
I never thought, see eye to eye.
Yeah, but this week, that's why I was sort of relaxed about it. I knew you'd probably go for Honey, I Shrunk the Kids because it's wholesome and they're really nice children. I thought you'd be with me, Victoria.
I thought I'd be with you. And then I watched it again.
Inner Space is very good.
It is very good. That's why it should have won.
It's very entertaining.
There's so too much going on.
I don't like this.
We know.
I don't like what's happening here. Right then. Chris, you want to finish the show? I'm having a moment. Oh, I will tell you one thing very quickly because I almost forgot. You know the bit where the kids in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids are beating up the giant scorpion with sticks and rocks?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't that remind you of the TV movie It, starring Tim Curry? And that completes this week's obligatory Tim Curry reference. I nearly forgot and I wrote it down.
You forgot last week. I know I did.
That's why I was making an effort.
I think we've retired it.
I think there has to come a time when we do. And I say it
because
that's
because
like
you yourself forget it quite
it
a lot. Because
it doesn't make it special then, does it? If it's just something we do every week.
Are you both saying we're retiring the obligatory Tim Curry reference?
You keep forgetting it is what's retiring
because
it.
I'm forgetful. That's not retiring something. That's forgetting. They're entirely different. Do you want to end the show?
Let's talk about next week.
Great.
I thought this one's never going to end. Yeah. Ben Ryan.
Inner Space should have won.
From Sydney in New Zealand. Thank you so much for writing to us. The films are... The clue was Cage Fight. Three-way cage fight, and we are doing The Rock versus Con Air versus Face Off. And Alex, you've got The Rock. Chris, you've got Con Air. Vicky, you've got Face Off.
Are you doing an impression of me? Is that what this is?
No. Good. I was funny. Right. And super excited. We're super excited to do these. We've been talking about doing these for a long time.
Well, we were. I mean, Ben, I don't want to burst your bubble right now, but the wrong movie's going to get picked, so I wouldn't.
Don't take it out on Ben.
I'm just saying, why bother? I'm saving him time, 3 hours of his week.
And you know what I'm going to do?
Do something else.
You know what I'm going to do? Because I've just realised this. If there's a chance that no film will win if each of us pick a different film.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask Ben what his favourite of these is between now and then. And he can have the deciding vote if
good
it's a
idea.
Draw.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for listening. The winner this week is Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Next week is our big cage fight. We hope to see you then. If you want to get in touch, we are on Twitter at ClashPod, or you can email us show@clashpod.com. Thank you very much for listening. Please do subscribe to us and rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, or other. Back in a week. Bye-bye.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously,
man. Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.